Our family worked for one family of people in Columbia, South Carolina. This worked from one to another, worked for one family about 25 years. My mother was the first one to work there. And after I got old enough, I worked there. And that same girl, my daughter there, I worked there long enough till she got big enough. She worked there a little while, but not as long as I did. And I heard so many people talking about going to Philadelphia, going to Philadelphia. So I got in the notion to go to Philadelphia too. So I told her one day, I said, "Miss Mims, I'm going to Philadelphia." "Oh," she said, "Lily, them Yankees don't want you up there." I said, "Well, I'm going to find out for myself." And I did.
Brothers and sisters, greetings. This is the Reverend Marshall Lorenzo Shepherd, Jr., welcoming you to Going North, Tales of the Great Migration, a series of programs on the experiences of Southern blacks who came up from the South to Philadelphia during the early years of this century. Today's show is entitled, Domestic Work.
1925, I came to Philadelphia, and I've been working all of my days since I've been up here and raised my family, a mother of nine, and raise them all. Now I got so many grands and great grands, I can't count them all. But you know, when you put God in your program, He makes a way for you.
Oh, yeah.
You can't see that way, but you always have a ram in the bush. Somebody gonna come and do something for you, right? So I don't feel uneasy now.
No.
I don't care when my time comes to go and meet the Lord, because that's what I'm working for.
Thousands of women, married and single, with children and without, made the trip north during the Great Migration. They were widows, daughters, young women eager to help support their families back home, and for most of them, the only work available and the work they were most familiar with outside of farming was housework. Today it is difficult to imagine just how basic and important a part of life servants were before the modern age of electric ranges, dishwashers, laundry machines, mops, and all the other household conveniences. Finding work was never a problem. There was always a shortage of women willing to do housework, so jobs were plentiful. During the early decades of this century, white women were moving into jobs opening in sales, industry, and clerical positions, leaving housework more and more to women of color. In 1920, black women were 5% of all women over the age of 10, 13% of all women wage earners, 54% of all servants, and 78% of all laundresses. The demand was great, requirements minimal, and women poured in from the South, many of them with little knowledge of the city, as Lily McKnight remembers.
Didn't know one thing about Philadelphia. When I got here, I wish I had stayed in the South. Because everything was so different. But I went to the employment office and they sent me on a job, $12 a week. I could still sit on that and made $2 a week and did hair and got by just as good. But you like to spread out and see what's going on in other part of the world.
So what was it like to work as a domestic in the city of Philadelphia? George Madison.
Well, basically, there used to be a term called working in service, where you would what they call sleep in, and you would probably have a half a day off one day in the week, and maybe half a day Sunday, or every other Sunday. Other than that, you stayed in on the job. You slept, ate, and did everything. If you were a man, you would be the butler, houseman, and chauffeur. The woman would cook, sometime wash, iron, and clean. You never had any time to yourself.
Domestic work was the backbone of the black economy, and in 1920, just to give an example of one year, over 86% of all black women and about 20% of all black men in Philadelphia were doing it. Though day work was becoming more and more popular, live-in service was still in the greatest demand. Most families had only one live-in maid. She did the housekeeping, cooked the meals, helped take care of the children, did everything but the laundry. which was usually sent out or saved for a washerwoman who came in on Thursday. Bessie Yancey arrived in the city in 1918 and obtained work as a nurse.
I started to work with $1.50 a week. Well, I was inexperienced, and I thought that was a lot of money for a greenhorn like me that was coming up from the country. And experienced people didn't get too much more than that. If they got $10 a week, they were doing well. In those days, you could live on it. You could dress yourself, and people got roomed out. They could pay their room rent. And if they wanted to, smart enough, they could have a few pennies left over.
Coming from large families, you learn housework while at home, often working with mothers in the big house as children. So by the time you arrived in the North, you had great experience. But Northern ways could be quite different. Many ran away from home in 1917 to escape from working in the fields. Soon after arriving, she took a private position, and on her first day on the job, she was told to cook an eggplant. Never having seen one before, she began to boil it. When the mistress of the house discovered her mistake,
so she said, if you go to the man, I'll teach you. She learned. But it was so many things that I know I stood out that I did, that they knew that I was from the country. Because Mrs. Eggendorf, she told me like this. She said, I know you're from the south. She said, but don't worry about it. She says, I like to get the little green horns. She said, then I can learn them my way so you're easy to train. Well,
Beulah Collins was born on the eastern shore of Maryland, where she, in all likelihood, would have remained had not her husband died in the influenza epidemic of 1918, leaving her with child. Beulah came to Philadelphia to seek medical treatment and to raise her child in a place where he could get the education she had been denied. As so many others like her, she took work as a live-in maid with a family in a large house on Lincoln Drive.
Well, I was young and I could get around. And I didn't consider it so hard because I had come from the country where it was hard. And I just felt like I had fallen in luck, don't you know? To come where it wasn't so hard because when I was raised in the country, I was out in the farm, all in the country. And I got up there and I had my baby. And we'd work during the day, and these friends of mine would work for her sister. We had clubs that we went to. I was young and I enjoyed myself. Yeah, life was pretty easy.
Compared to work on the farm, domestic work was not, as a rule, terribly all that hard. Most housewives adjusted loads so as to keep servants not too unhappy. Housewives wanted to keep a good maid. It was expensive and time-consuming to train someone new. And the emotional trauma involved in accepting them into the family could be great. Even so, housework paid poorly, as Beulah remembers.
She paid me $13 a week. A week! I won't forget that. I guess in a way, that I made myself satisfied because that's the way others was being treated. You see what I mean? If she had give me $13 and give my friends a whole lot of more, or their people had given them a lot of more, I would have been. But we were treated to life, and I made myself satisfied.
Though wages were greater than in the South, the high cost of living offset much of the gains. And on the average, black women made about one half of their male counterparts. Still, many were able to save enough to send something home or to take care of their children living elsewhere in the city. What is amazing, in retrospect, is that wages were not a great point of contention. But then, these women were from the South. Not only were they used to a lower standard of living, but theirs were lives of isolation, lived in the midst of someone else's family. Close attachments to the family were often developed. Most of the women we talked to still retain affection for most of their employers. And though a bad placement put you at the mercy of every woman demand of the missus, these Southern women were also generally inclined to accept their lot in life.
Well, I had a pretty good time because I always know how to work. When you know how to work, you can get a job. And if they like you and you like them, they like somebody to be humble, kind, and a little bit of manners. Not no fresh somebody, and I never was fresh. So I got along fine. I don't have no complaint. I was treated just fine by the people that I worked with up here, everywhere I ever worked.
But not all people were temperamentally fit for domestic work.
There were some people that rebelled. Well, I mean, they would leave and go somewhere else, maybe do the same thing, but just get fed up, or to try to get something else. There is a certain type of personality that can take that housework. I couldn't. It's sort of demeaning. Because you're not actually a human being. You're a piece of furniture. They will say anything, do anything in front of you. You're not supposed to notice it.
That's what I said. Things were very, very bad after I came to Philadelphia. Because I was disappointed with Philadelphia. Because they say going up north, but you figure you're going to something great. I'm going up north where money falls from the trees. But when you got to Philadelphia, you found it was different.
Fanny Hutchinson.
It was very much different. Because then, you know, when you did housework in Philadelphia, you washed the windows, you washed the walls, you did everything. And you worked from 8 to 4, from 9 to 5, you made those hours. And you was working all the time you was there.
Job, it don't pay me much. They give me just what they think I'm worth. I'm gonna change my mind. Yes, change my mind. Cause I keep the servant room blues all the time.
Many witness.
I felt like this. I don't mind working, but I don't want to be drove. I said, now when you be driving me and you're going to tell me after I done worked, you worked and I'm tired now and I feel that's enough, then you're going to come back and find another half of a house for me to clean or another big tub of clothes to wash. So I thought that was just like my grandmother had told me. Because sometimes she said she would work and work and work. And when she was figured the day was in that she used to call them the missus. The missus would go and find more work and sometimes she'd be working until way late in the night. So I felt depressed because it looked like she was driving me. She wasn't saying, will you do it? You do it. It was like a demand. And I didn't like it. Because after I left home and got out from being under the rules of being, like they say, was slavery, because I'm the second generation, I'm from the slave.
Right.
I still felt the effects of what my grandmother always told me. And after I came here to Philadelphia, I felt it more when they, well, just the same as I felt it in the South. Hmm. So, in different ones always would tell me, some women, sometimes I'd meet them and they didn't work so hard, they would be over crying, going home, they'd be so tired, they could hardly drag, and just dragging along. And I used to feel sorry for them because they were older women, and why would they have to be, they would sit on a streetcar and talk about how much work the madam had put on that day, washing sheets and pillowcases and washing them, hanging them on a line. They didn't give them no laundry. You did that by hand, and you ironed those sheets by hand. And sometime woman said, one lady, old lady, she said, I just feel like sitting down in the street anywhere. I said, I am so tired. And she says, I went in this morning 6 o'clock. Then we all would be coming over at 6 o'clock in the evening. And she, I said, that's the day you work. So I said, how much did you get? She says, $1.50. It was like you was drove to do everything you were doing.
I received my company in the area. Still these folks don't want to see them here. Gonna change my mind.
people in the South, they seem like they cared you more for you as a person, not as a slave to just do so much of this. They'd have a cook, and they would have a man to work outside, and then sometimes they would have maybe another child to take care of the children. That they'd have three or four maids, different people to do different things. But here, I mean, if you, you go out there to work in a house, you did everything to be done in the house. You'd go from here to there the whole day long.
They have a party at noon, a party at night. The midnight parties don't ever break up right.
In Philadelphia, they worked you harder than in the South. Servants were more expensive, the pace of life faster, the demands of work is greater, and the intimacy of people less. Day work could be especially grueling, as there was no personal bond built from living together, and housewives would attempt to exact every last ounce of work out of their underpaid servants. And what were the options for women who were temperamentally or otherwise disinclined from housework? Utensie Hillian.
We heard it was great opportunities for blacks. And we didn't find it like we had heard it when we came. Jobs were many of jobs. And yes, I could get a good job in someone's kitchen, but I didn't want that. I wasn't educated for that. So I didn't accept that. I was a governess for a while, and that's as far as down I went.
It was not uncommon to find women with college degrees employed as maids or washerwomen. The only Philadelphia schools blacks could teach in were the all-black elementary schools, and these had long waiting lists. Black businesses were few and employment hard to obtain. Jobs in sales and clerical positions and in many professions would not employ black women until the 1930s, and even then only in token form. The principal alternative to domestic work was public work, doing much the same chores they did in people's homes, but in office buildings, laundries, or stores. In department stores, for instance, they might work as maids, cleaners, with some as stock girls, wrappers, porters, and sorters. Really any sort of menial job in which they did not come in contact with the public. There was some factory work available too, but for most, it was no option at all.
No, I went to a factory once to work, and I stayed there, I think, 3 days. Crowd was too rough. Cursing and swearing in your face all day long, and I couldn't be bothered with them kind of people. I wasn't brought up like that.
I'm a domestic worker. I can't stand crowds. When I came here, I had an aunt that was working in a tobacco factory, and there ain't no way in the world that I'd work in a tobacco factory.
Ella Lee.
I visited her a couple of times, and the smell in that tobacco factory, just ain't no way I'd work in it. I'd much rather take my laundry home and do it. I'll go into the white woman's house and in a clean basement or something other than do my laundry than all that old stink in the tobacco factory. And in these factories, perhaps the pay is better. I don't know. I can't tell because I'm just not a mixer. I left the cook. I left the laundry. I just left to be at home.
To Ella, Eula, Lily, and others like them, the trials of domestic work were still preferable to labor in the factories. They'd grown up on the farm, surrounded by family. Domestic work was more familiar to them. It wasn't as rough, noisy, and harried or regimented as factory work. Factory work, even with the possibility of better wages and more free time, was just too great a leap to make. But there were women who preferred work in the factories, especially during the war when wages were high and opportunities greater. Black women deserted the homes in favor of industrial employment. But with few exceptions, the wages were low, less than those paid to white women doing the same work. They were treated poorly and confined to the worst machines and least desirable occupations. Philadelphia's tobacco factories had employed black women for decades in the stripping and stemming of the tobacco leaves. Marie Mathis.
In the tobacco factory, that way it was harder. And they had all colored in there. And they had, you had one dressing room for all them women to go in there and, you know, get washed up and get ready to go home. And they, one time, they took us around towing the factory. And you should have saw how they had it for the whites. They had big, nice places for them to go and wash up. And the place was just as clean as a whistle. And I know they had somebody to clean it for them, but we had to clean our own. When we got finished, we had to stop in time to clean up our own place. And it was awful in there. It was. I know it wasn't fair because, you know, you'd have to get out. You would really have to work hard. Sometimes the girls would be standing up to the machine. They'd be working so fast. And it wasn't fair at all, the way they treated us. But what could you do?
Attempts to integrate the workforces were usually met by strong opposition from the white workers. So women would move from job to job, filling in where needed, and laid off as soon as the order was filled or the season was over.
So then I got out of the back factory. I started working in these clothes factories. And I worked quite a few places. I couldn't think of the name of all the places that I worked, because a lot of times, you know, work gets slack and get laid off. Maybe you find another job before they call you back there. And so you just go on there.
That reminds me, too. I was ironing. And the lady said to me, the storm came up, the lightning.
Willa Allen.
And she said, "Willa, are you through?" I told her, "No, ma'am, I'm not through. I don't work when it's lightning for nobody. I'll finish and go home when I'm finished." That's what I told her. I told her then, too, I said, "That's why I didn't work in the factory. That's why I'm not in a factory. I'm a work rep. I can stop." Well, I knew I could get another day's work, you see. I could get day's work, and I knew it. Didn't buy me a mo.
Another reason Willa preferred day work was that it enabled her to be with her family in the evenings. For women living in, however, this was not possible. The only time you had off was Thursday afternoons and every other Sunday. So how did you meet other folks, go courting, manage a family life? And many women with children were doing live-in work. Coming north, they would bring the kids with them or leave them with family until they could afford to send for them. Once the whole family was up here, there was a problem of how to raise your children from afar. Arriving in Philadelphia, Beulah Collins sought work in a private family. In order to do that, she had to find a place for her son.
I didn't take my baby with him, but I put him in a nursing home where some other children were with a colored family, and she took care of children, took care of babies, and she would send him to school, and that's where I was when I went with Mrs. Richard. He was in a nursing home where they took care of children. She had a lot of them. They called her Mom Taylor, and she raised them just like a child. She had four or five children, maybe six of them, I don't know, several of them, just like their brothers and sisters. And I felt perfectly contented with Mom Taylor because she had other people's children there, and she took them just like her own. Taught them how to get up and wash themselves and how to have little jobs and do little jobs. Some of them would have a day to wash the dishes. Another would have a day to clean the room. That stuck in them, just like she would at her mother. And I felt pretty well satisfied because he was there with those boys and girls. Felt pretty good. I felt like it was the place for me. And I worked for Mrs. Richard all the years. and she knew I had this child, and at certain days she would come out there and let him stay with me, stay overnight, over the weekends. Then he'd go back to Mom Taylor.
Circumstances wouldn't change much during the 1920s. Though day work was rapidly replacing live-in, black women would have to wait another generation until other types of jobs would open for them in the city. Housework was the backbone of the black economy in the city of Philadelphia. Men could be laid off or injured. The stock market could rise or fall. The world could turn upside down. But for black women, steady employment, often with the same family for many years, was always there, year in and year out. So how should we conclude our program on domestic work in the city? About not only an occupation, but a way of life that today is as rare as it once was common? It was a world of mixed blessings, and the women developed a philosophy of life that sustained them. As Lily says, no use making trouble when you don't have to. They worked hard, raised their children, supported their families, stuck close to the church, and led quiet lives. Some are bitter, some contented, some happy they made the move, others wish they had never come.
I came to Philadelphia because people said it was better, so much better living in the North than it was in the South. But so far as I'm concerned, you got to work like a dog to have anything anywhere you go. Now, you're recording this, and I hope you'll let somebody read it. My grandmother and grandfather were slaves. Both of them were slaves. And I have plowed a many fur in the state of Georgia. I have worked. I know what work is, and I know what not work is. And I know, honey, if you don't work, you ain't gonna have nothing unless you steal. I know a lot. And I have worked just as hard here in the state of Pennsylvania as I worked in Georgia. Yes, I came here. And when I came here and found my family. Some of them here. And some of them here died just as poor as some of them died in Georgia. That's true.
I wouldn't want to go back and live down on the farm no more and raise chickens and cows and things like that. Of course, I'm older, but I never did after I come up and got up here and got to work. I never went back there. I never cared to go back there. We had people down there. I could have gone down there and stayed, but I didn't want to. I wanted to stay up here where my baby could have a better education. I was living for him.
Right.
That was my idea because he had no father. His father was dead. He died in the First World War. All these 60 years he's been dead. I seen that his stomach. Seeing that someone take care of that cemetery, where I expect to be carried myself.
It's a highway to heaven.
Going North, Tales of the Great Migration, was conceived, written, and produced by Charles Hardy. Narration by Reverend Marshall Lorenzo Shepherd, Jr. Engineered by Leonard Persky at Toucan Productions in Philadelphia. The interview with Ella Lee recorded by Diane Turner. Willa Allen recorded by Donna DeVore. Marie Mathis by Harriet Garrett, and George Madison by Jackie Carlisle. Phonograph recordings courtesy of Rush Shore. This is a public history project of the Atwater Kent Museum. Funding was made possible by grants from the Pennsylvania Humanities Council and the following contributors, Roman Haas and PSFS.
None can walk up there, but the pure in heart. It's a highway to heaven. I'm walking up the King's Highway.
This program is made possible in part by a grant from the American Public Radio Fund.
whose contributors include the Ford Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.